Hey gang, are you new to this podcast? Have you subscribed on iTunes or Stitcher and realized that you can only access the 20 most recent shows on these platforms? Do you want to binge on How Did I Get Here? Well, check out our archives available for free. Simply go to howdidigethere.podbean.com. Look on the right-hand column and hundreds of shows are easily accessible by month and year. Check out such great conversations with Quiet Company, The Blue Bonnets, Ume, Sweet Spirit, and many, many more. Just go to howdidigethere.podbean.com and start listening. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time. How did I get here? And now here is your host, I'm Bobby.
When we talk,
all right. Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you guys today. Joe Salinas, filmmaker and musician, is back on the show today. He's been traveling around the country for like the last year, working on a documentary about the big boys called You Can Color Outside the Lines. He's been talking to all kinds of punk rock legends and rock and roll legends, members of Pearl Jam. He tells great stories about going around and meeting up with these people. Fantastic dude, Joe Salinas. He's a really inspired guy, and he's just out there making this movie for the love of the big boys. Plus, he was wearing shoes that were like custom shoes with big boys, with the big boys logo on it. All right. So if you're a punk fan, Joe Salinas has fantastic stories for you. All right. So before we get to this conversation with Joe Salinas, let's talk to Reverend Merrill Wade, who stopped by a few weeks ago to tell us about his Soul of a Musician series that he and the St. Matthew's Episcopal Church are putting on every Sunday, 6:30 p.m. at the Iron Cactus North. I asked him to come back and talk about it some more because he's an interesting guy and this is a great series. All right. Let's talk to Reverend Merrill Wade from St. Matthew's Episcopal Church about Soul of a Musician series.
Well, an impassioned community gives back or something, but basically it's connecting an odd array of us. I mean, what the Sims Foundation does is fairly obvious, and what Ham does,
right?
And then what Black Fret does, and what the Soul Series does. Now, I mean, we're all in different categories of real contribution to musicians, but it's all about musicians. And if you want to just say, how do I fit in that?
Right.
It's because I've got the same, what we're trying to do is the same thing. We're trying to give back to musicians. And we're not just having shows. We want the musician to walk away from our show feeling renewed in some way.
Yeah.
Cared for.
Yeah.
I mean, not like that was a good show. It was a good gig. But like, God, that was fun.
No,
God, that was good.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa, I appreciated that.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's hard to find that. I noticed
that's what we're looking for.
I noticed that in the press release there was a thing that said artists can play music in a receptive and loving environment. And I was like, oh, you mean like the opposite of what we're normally doing?
<That's right. laughs> Yeah, yeah. I mean, just yes, it is the opposite. Well, bunch of cool stuff you get to do.
Of course.
But the thing is, Johnny, we don't have any competition.
No.
We don't have to compete with anybody. We raise our own money. We're not trying to make money.
Right.
We don't charge tickets. We don't have a profit margin.
So it's just free admission to just come in there.
Oh, it'll end up costing you something because I sell merch.
Oh, yeah.
I push that stuff.
Good.
And sometimes we raise money for Ham.
So that's good.
You're not going to walk out without eating or drinking or buying a bunch of stuff.
Right.
So it's really not free. It's no cover.
Right, no cover. That's what I meant. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's an enticing thing, getting people in. I mean, believe it or not.
Well, I know it
no
is.
No cover, really, for
yeah,
some
we're
reason.
We're not trying to trick anybody, but when they come in,
yeah,
we let them know that this is here. I mean, these musicians have all this music. And I've got a whole spiel about why you should buy a CD. I mean, I put it on them.
That's good.
Because
musicians are terrible at it.
It's a mixed. You're trying to say how good I am. It's not.
Yeah.
That's
weird.
That's an appropriate humility. But yeah. the thing about these CDs is so what I say it's an artifact. Okay, you came here and you listened to Johnny Gowdy and you heard some of his original music and this album is his most recent album. You buy it. If you've got a minute to hang out afterwards, he'll he'll put his name on
yeah.
it. But you take that and you give that to somebody that will put it in his CD player and play it. Give it to them and say, I saw this guy live. This guy is good.
That's awesome.
Give it to him. And maybe they'll take it, and if they like it, maybe they'll burn it on, you know, into on to where they have it on their iTunes.
Yeah, yeah.
But what you've done is you've, you know, you've
sold
you've,
some music.
You've sold, you've bought music, and you've shown interest and care for this musician.
Yeah.
Right? You walked up, gave him money or her money.
Yeah.
You took the artifact of that, and you gave it away. But that's the number one way you can actually make a new fan.
Yeah. Totally.
But that's the pitch.
And you know what I think, too, is the way that you're doing it with the Solo Musician Series, you have people come up and play, and then you talk to them about two specific songs that you've gotten the lyrics to beforehand. Mm-hmm. You've passed the lyrics out to the audience.
That's right.
And then this, it to me, those are the things like in my, not to make this about me in any way, but in my idea of this show, I thought like, well, I could have people play on here, but honestly, in a way that... if we just talked and we could play the recordings that they've already made as the music of it, then we could have these conversations. And in a time when it is so hard to get an audience, to get attention, because the internet is just an influx of like everybody, you know what I mean? Check it out. Check me out. Check me out. Look what I ate. And if there's a way that people can sit down and kind of make a personal connection, or in your case, not just a personal, but a spiritual connection with the artist and the music that they're listening to, then maybe they will become an actual fan of that artist. Not like, oh, I like that song, I've got it on my iTunes. Like, oh, I love Amy Cook, who's your first guest at the Soul of a Musician series. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, we're looking forward to Amy Cook. What I've discovered is once... we book somebody and begin the process of communicating. It's typically me or another priest that works with me. When we start communicating with the artist, it's a different kind of communication, I think, really, than they're used to. It's a it's factual, and it's interest in getting, you know, sound and production and check-in and sound check and all that stuff's happening.
Yeah.
But it's a different inquiry when we start talking to each other, and it just develops to be a completely different experience for the musician. There's a different level of the introduction is less about hype.
I mean
Gina Chavez when she played for us, or Kevin Russell, and these folks
are
friends.
Also important to have some people with it that are going to bring some people out too, but also
but my point being my point being is it I don't have to do the best such and such who had the finest album. My interest is, look at this dignified guy.
Yeah.
Look at, this is Kevin Russell, and this is a unique animal, and here he is with us, and it's my pleasure to be able to welcome you to the Solo Musician Series. Let's get acquainted. And it's really what's what it is. And so the natural kind of promotion and energy. We have to do some of that on our posters that we put up. You know, we want to create a cool look because it is a cool experience. But once the artist is in a sense with us at Iron Cactus North on a Sunday night at the Soul Musician Series, once that 6:30 chime hits, I'll step up and I'll say, okay, when Amy Cook comes, I'll step up and I'll say, hi, I'm Merrill Wade. I'm the rector of St. Matthew's Episcopal Church. You are here tonight for the 104th gathering of the Solo Musician Series.
You've done 104 of them already?
103. 100, and that, clap, 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 everybody.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And we start. And I say, and tonight, we have Austin's Amy Cook. Amy, welcome. There's no big jacked up set of compliments. That's okay. I mean, it's really okay to rev it up.
Right.
But the bigger thing is to have this kind of, all right, here's the artist. She's introduced. Here comes some music, three or four songs that just set up, warm the house, and get a sense of what is this artist like. And I think in that setting, with that kind of initial embrace and the way we lay it out, it just creates this real easy rapport when it comes time to pass out those lyric sheets and for the artist to describe the song that he or she has written they'll sometimes, as you know, sometimes they will play the song, then we'll talk about it. Sometimes they'll give a little intro to the song if they want to give us some clues about what's going on.
Yeah. Man, so do you listen to music like as a fan? Do you listen to music? Are you like a lyric guy? Are you a guy that's out there? Are you like a John Prine kind
of
like?
No, I'm really, frankly, it's the, for me, the interpretation of the music is primarily the music itself. And then the lyrics kind of take flight if the music does it.
Yeah.
I mean, in other words, I'm not a poet by nature.
Right.
Just reading lyrics, I can be interested in it. I'm a whole lot more interested in a good hook.
Yeah.
Or a key change.
Yeah.
You know?
You're a pop guy.
Yeah.
Me too.
I am.
I'm a rock guy too, but
I like classical music too.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about this. Soul of a Musician series, you're in your fourth year, takes place at the Iron Cactus North. It's 6:30 p.m. on Sunday, starting February 14th with Amy Cook, February 21st with the Peterson Brothers. Fabulous dudes. Had them on the show. February 28th, no show because of the Episcopalian holiday, the Oscars.
And, that's right.
And on the Sunday, March 6th, Carson, I don't know why I thought that was so funny, but when I read it and it was like no Oscars and then no show Easter's, I was like,
that's right.
I totally understand. Okay, so
that's funny.
On Sunday, the 13th, The Deer. On Sunday, the 20th, Billy Harvey. On Sunday, 27th, no show because it is Easter. On Sunday, the 3rd, Emily Bell. On Sunday, the 10th, Jackie Benson. And then April 17th, Jeff Black from Nashville is closing out part one of the series.
Right. There's too many seasons, actually.
Okay. Too many
the
seasons.
The spring, not too many, like no. Two multiple seasons, but there's actually two halves of one season.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So eight shows in the first half, eight shows in the second.
Okay.
Picture a poster with eight shows and a second poster with eight more shows. So I'm in the process of booking the second half of the spring season. We will end up sometime in June with 16 shows. That's how much money we've raised money for. That's how much we're going to spend in the spring. We'll raise money again, and we'll do a fall series of a minimum of 16 shows. So the whole idea for this, for the first 3 years, we were operating off of a grant from our parent organization, the Episcopal Diocese of Texas, and now we're doing our own money.
Wow.
Yeah, it's good.
Are you... Well, obviously you are a nonprofit. Are you going to go to that Soul of a Musician thing, Feel the Love event thing they're having next?
You know, I heard about that, but I don't remember.
I'll tell you about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, off the mics. But it'll be over by the time this plays. Anyway, so you've handpicked these musicians.
Yes.
And some of you have come through as recommendations to other musicians. Let me ask you this. You're just meeting like Amy Cook. You're just going to be meeting Billy Harvey. These are people that I love hanging out with. And you're in for a great treat. Let me ask you, have you ever walked away from one of these things? Friends with someone?
Absolutely. I am friends.
And stay in touch with them.
Oh, afterwards. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's a great thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
That happens on this show. Like Amy and I became friends doing the show.
Yeah. No question about it.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's some of these musicians are really good friends and very important friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is there some kind of like, I'm glad that you take it not as like a religious sort of thing, because that would then exclude other people from, you know, or you know what I mean?
Oh, no
that
question about it.
This is just
it.
An open thing, and you're getting into sort of the spiritual aspects, and you talked about it when we talked before about the space between man and God.
I think it's probably easier instead of talking about theology and God, is just to think about the idea of sacred music that is in and of itself deliberately written for adoration of God or whoever the higher being is or whatever the religion is, and secular music, which is thought of as anything that is not sacred,
right?
And so what I really think, Johnny, is that the church has realized that the good news, whether that's the good news of who Jesus is, or renewal, healing, hope, restoration, refreshment, experiencing kindness, love, the whole idea of the highest human nature available to us, to where we are growing more tolerant, accepting, encouraging. When you think about all the breakdowns, all the red state, blue state, all the kind of crap that we deal with in our civilization, between nations, in families, all this kind of stuff, a more renewed and faithful human being would be less violent, less angry. It doesn't mean you don't ever get angry. It just means you're less. I mean, you're not trending towards being more of a jerk.
You're plateauing at anger and staying there.
You're also finding some inner way to allow that anger to dissipate and to not be, to be revengeful and all that sort of thing. So secular music, such as it is, I don't believe such a thing exists, really. I think every piece of music, whether it's a frustrated, nihilistic shout of hatred, is still coming from a place, where it wants to see reform or change or something. And sometimes, if you think about the nastiest, meanest old punk stuff or metal or whatever, which you just, it's hard to find something that you think is redemptive in it, because it can sometimes it's just so violent.
Right.
Or some of the worst case scenarios that you pick up in hip hop and that sort of situation, anti-women, and the guy, you think, God, that is just, that's disgusting and it's painful to hear. Yet there's also underneath it, there's a real story and there's a real yearning for relief.
And understanding.
Wanting
to be understood too.
Yes.
That's where that frustration comes from.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so that we can say that's mean-spirited, hateful music, and it doesn't mean listening to it is pleasant.
Right.
But we can say there's always been protest. There's always been underground angst expressed.
Sure.
Whether it's in literature and music, it's there. It's there. So it speaks to the human condition. And so any music that speaks to the human condition in a ways that it's seeking healing,
right,
it's seeking, some sort of reform or new life.
Yeah.
To me, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to support.
Yeah.
Some of our artists, they'll be playing the Soul Series, and I mean, like Shiny Ribs, Kevin will crank up an old gospel tune every now and then and let it rip, and we don't ask him to.
No.
But it's just kind of in his repertoire, right? And so sometimes that happens, but by and large, it's the real life stuff.
Yeah.
That musicians, like the rest of us, they sing for us.
Yeah.
They speak for us in a way. Poets and musicians and sometimes even preachers speak for us. Will say the things that, gosh, I needed to hear that.
Yeah.
And I'm reminded of my own humanity. And there's real good news in that.
That's amazing.
And that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. That's amazing that you've taken such a step. Like you don't just hear music like that and appreciate musicians like that and what they do like that. You do something about it. You bring it to the people. You heard the good news and you're spreading it. That's just what you do.
Yeah, it is.
And what was it? Was you Duke Music Scout? Oh, yeah. You were spreading the word then.
Yeah. In a way, you're right. Because, it was, but I will say that the meeting the musicians and that basically on Friday mornings when this Duke Music Scout thing was going on was 2009 and 2010. And so it started with me just kind of looking through the Austin Chronicle. Just to say it again, I was on FM 104.9 The Horn with Aaron Hogan.
Right.
And I was Duke Music Scout, and I would call in on Friday mornings and give a little promotion.
Yeah.
And that led to phoners.
Yeah.
And then that led to, ACL's coming up. And that led ultimately to me interviewing Vampire Weekend's drummer on a Friday morning, and Coheed and Cambria's drummer, and all this crazy stuff that happened. Because it's funny to book a musician on the radio.
Yeah.
When all you do is you tell the label, this is Duke with FM 104.9 The Horn, and we have a sports talk radio show, but this is a chance for your artist to come on on the radio, and it's a crossover.
Speak to some new people.
And who in the band loves sports? Oh, so Chris Thompson loves sports. Why don't we bring Chris on? And there was the Vampire Weekend got
That's
calling
awesome.
In. They were in a bus in Arizona and called in and they talked about, I forget who it was that he liked, but you end up talking sports and then you go to the break with a song from the band. But in that whole process, I had to call and prep a lot of these guys and say, here's what we're doing.
Right.
And occasionally there's folks that, to this day, I talk sports with Citizen Cope. And we you know, Clarence Greenwood.
Are you a sports guy? Going for in the Super Bowl?
I'm a huge Longhorn fan.
Okay. They're not in the Super Bowl.
No, they're not. I think I'd like to see Peyton Manning in Denver win, but I have a great admiration for Carolina. They have Cam Newton's fantastic.
Were you on the horn when you were on the radio? Was that? No. Yeah. Okay. My friend Charlie Hodge had a show on there. I was on there.
Yeah, he was. I didn't know him, but I would hear him come on. That was about an 18-month lark.
Yeah.
It's finally got to be too much. I mean, because once you start dealing with touring musicians at that level, you're dealing with tour managers, and it's just got harder.
Annoying.
And then they had a change of management, and that was the end of it, and that was good for me.
Yeah.
But it was a little period in my life that was fun.
That's good. This is a new period in your life that's fun,
too.
It is. You married?
I am. So it's married to Crystal. We have two kids.
Does the whole family come to the thing? Are they into it?
I mean, Crystal comes some. My son has come some. My daughter's at Baylor, so she doesn't get to come much. They're not into it like I am.
Okay.
But they know that Dad's doing something interesting.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
They think it's cool.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I wanted to tell you this in the last segment that we talked about. I didn't get to it. I'm a reverend, too.
Is that right?
But like internet reverend.
Mm-hmm.
Universal life.
You do weddings, right?
I did, too. And I stopped. And then I stopped.
Why did you stop?
Well, because I really believed in the like one of them was my cousin and his wife, and I even knew her since she was a friend of another cousin of mine. I knew her since she was like, you know, in her teens. And then another one's a bass player in my band's great. We're great friends. We're like family. And he and his wife, it's a very special thing.
Yeah.
And then somebody asked me to do it, and it felt like it was like a, because it was funny that it was me doing it, not that it was special. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, that, I don't want to. And plus, the odds were getting slimmer that the marriages would last. Mm. But anyway, but I'm not. I didn't go to a seminary.
Yeah,
it's probably a lot less funny than I thought it was in my head.
well, but I've always respected another fellow minister.
Yeah, I'm a man of the cloth. Thank you so much for coming by. And this is
a very special
thing. It's great talking to you. We should do this again.
Because
You're going to do it. Yep. You're going to do the second series again, and we can do just a bunch of Johnny and Merrill chats.
I'd love that. I would love that very much.
Okay, everyone, go to the Soul of the Musician series. Starts Sunday, April 14th with Amy Cook. The show is at the Iron Cactus at 6:30 on Sunday, 6:30 sharp to 7:45 sharp. That's an easy night.
That's the intention. The intention is that you don't have to wonder if it's going to go an extra hour or... And sometimes you have to rein them in, these musicians.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes when you're playing a gig, like you were saying, you wanted them to have an experience where they were having a really good time, and they're like, yeah, that was great, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes when you're doing that and you're like, I got to stop? No way!
That's exactly right.
You know?
That's right.
Yeah, you're not going to take the feel-good.
But we have a big, big dinner afterwards. And
that's great.
Hang out. We don't stay real, real late, but the... That's where I really get to know the musicians, is we get to sit down.
Hey, this was the other thing I was going to say while you were talking, but I didn't want to interrupt you. You don't record these?
You know, we've recorded a few of them, but that's the next step.
You could put these out on as a show, as a podcast. Don't steal my thing, but you know what I'm talking
about. No, I think you're right. We've got a couple of them, and I think the problem, Johnny, is... We can make it work. Yeah. We've got the ability. We've got the equipment. It's somebody's got to edit it. We don't have time.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have time.
Right.
Now, I'm trying to develop a larger leadership team where there could be people that do a wide variety of aspects of things, where we could eventually get to that. I've got some money that was granted to us. That I can do some marketing work with.
Right.
You know, so it's possible to do that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Johnny. Thank you for having me.
People can find it at facebook.com/ Soul of a Musician series. Every Sunday starting February 14th, Valentine's Day, with the great Amy Cook.
Amy Cook.
Man, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Great guy. Reverend Merrill Wade from St. Matthew's Episcopal Church with his Soul of a Musician series starting back up this Sunday, March 6th, with Carson McCone. Okay, get out there, Iron Cactus North. You can find it at Soul of a Musician series on Facebook and get involved. All right, let's talk to Joe Salinas, filmmaker. You can find him at joesalinas.com. He is working on a new documentary about the Big Boys. Austin Seminole punk band, The Big Boys. His film is called You Can Color Outside the Lines. And Joe's been traveling around the country talking to all kinds of punk legends and rock legends. And we got together and sat down and talked about it, all right? I hope you guys have a great weekend and enjoy my conversation with this sweet and inspired man, Joe Salinas, all right? Have a great weekend. Let's get down. So I didn't make any notes.
I didn't. I made reminders because I know last time, a couple years ago, I like was leaving and I was like, you know, I didn't even get to talk about any of this other stuff. So, but it was still fine though.
I've been following you on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know you've been traveling and filming, and what are you making a Big Boys documentary?
I am directing.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm making that.
See, I don't need a bio or anything.
No, it's all there. You just look on Instagram and like Facebook and stuff.
Yeah.
So I've been out on the road constantly for the past couple of years, and especially the past year. And it's intimidating. You're staring into my eyes. Like,
sorry.
Glaring and looking into my soul.
Horny as shit, man.
All right, that's the end of the podcast. I'm going to go ahead and exit now.
I was going to see if you wanted to do this one in the tub, but I couldn't find anything wouldn't shock us.
You know, it's funny. Do you think the tub's big enough for both of us?
No, it's not.
We'd have to stick our legs out. Like, we'd have to side saddle it.
That's the grossest image. Okay, so you've been traveling. Okay, so tell me, why did you decide to do a documentary on the Big Boys?
I didn't actually.
Okay.
I listened to them since I was a kid.
Okay.
You know, like a lot of other bands. And Tim Kerr actually.
I love that guy.
Mm-hmm. He called me and was like, I know he's going to listen to this. My impression of you, Tim, is horrible, but it's like, hey, what are you doing later? It's not like that. It's very country.
What do you mean later?
He's not like that. So he wanted to get together and like talk about, we had met, you know, a couple of weeks before for another, project I was shooting, and, we got to talking and then like realized like, oh, you grew up in Lake Jackson, you know, and he's from there. And like, he knew about the, actually, he heard the last podcast that we did, and like,
so I'm getting
you
work.
Listened to it. Yeah, you're getting me work, so I'm gonna have to like give you credit or like throw you some money. And so he was doing shows back then, you know, and like surfing and skateboarding.
What do you mean back in the time of
back in the 70s?
Okay,
and like this, it's crazy here in Austin. There's like a there's a group of people from that area that we used to book shows back in the early 90s, mid 90s in community halls and like whatever we can get, you know, because we didn't have like proper venues. So, you know, they were all ages shows, and there would be touring bands that would come through Houston and would stop down in Lake Jackson and include sometimes. And it would be bands like At the Drive-In, Jimmy Eat World, you know, Mineral. That's how I met those guys back in the day. And it was all, I mean, there was the whole, I guess you'd label the emo thing back then, but all, you know, everybody was kind of helping out. You know, there were the bookers. There was a guy named Bob, and then like Jason Ladwig. He
like
there
was just
Austin.
A guy named Bob.
Yeah, no, he was.
Just go down to Lake Jackson, man. Look up Bob, man. You'll get a show.
Oh, Bob was a mover and a shaker, man. Like that dude. That dude, it was pretty awesome. I think he's still around. But yeah, he found out about that, and then asked me, like, you know, we had talked about like my upbringing and stuff, and he was like, would you be interested in doing a, you know, like a documentary, a film on the band? And at first I was a little hesitant because I was like, man, that's going to be a lot of work, you know? And I thought that he was thinking like just a small little 10-minute mini doc, you know? And, it grew. It became like this. What started out was just going to be originally like maybe 20 people, ended up being now like I'm up there in interviews and stuff.
Where is he now?
He's here in Austin.
Oh, he is?
You should get him on the show.
I need to get him on the
show. Yeah, I'll tell him.
Okay,
I'll tell him today.
Yeah.
He would probably love that. And then also my manager listens to your podcast.
Really?
Yeah, and he's out of Houston.
Who's that guy?
Rick Diaz.
Rick Diaz, hi.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Let me tell you real quick. I think I saw them.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
I didn't go to a lot of punk shows, but I think I went to a show once in like 1984 when I was in high school at Liberty Lunch that was, mm-hmm. I know it was the Butthole Surfers.
Yeah.
But I think it was the Big Boys.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. They toured. They did some shows out of town together.
Where I saw him the most though was in Bad Mother Goose,
because mm-hmm.
I was a huge fan of that band.
Yeah, the whole funk, funk stuff, man. Yeah. That was huge back in the, you know, in the mid '80s, late '80s, and then like early '90s. And I think it kind of from my perspective, you know, like it kind of died down. I was like Sprawl,
yeah,
Retarded Elf,
yeah,
Jellyfish, you know, all those bands, like, you know,
yeah,
were playing. It was awesome. I mean, that was
a great time. It was a scene.
That like was where you got to pogo. You could pogo your ass off.
Oh yeah, I didn't.
You
I
did pogo.
I was in a funk band from Houston at the time.
Oh yeah,
the Sprawl era called Pangenderum.
Okay,
but Sprawl, Bouffant, Jellyfish, mm-hmm. Bad Mother Goose. And then Joe Rockhead, I guess, was coming in. Anyway, all right.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Let's talk about the Big Boys. And when did they start?
Was that 79? Like
okay.
Yeah.
Here
in Austin. Chris Gates and Tim actually went up to Pflugerville. There was a ditch there. They would go skate. I mean, there wasn't like, I mean.
Oh, it's skating ditch.
Yeah, they would, you know, they were all skaters and stuff.
Right, right.
And there was like community. And like, they went out there and they were like throwing around the idea of starting a band. And they both played various instruments, you know, bass and guitar and whatever else. And so they were like, well, who's going to play bass and who's going to play guitar? And so they ended up doing a coin toss and like, boom. And then, Tim obviously got guitar and Chris got bass. And, so if it had been the other way around, that band probably would have sounded completely different, you know, but, then they, you know, they went through various drummers and, you know, of course Biscuit was the singer and they didn't know that they were doing this, but they were like planting the seeds, you know, like, a lot of people also consider Black Flag and a lot of these older bands were especially Black Flag, like laying the groundwork for the touring, for like the phone book, you know, and like, who to call for booking and like, but also like, you know, the Big Boys were that band. It was kind of like, you know, you can do your own thing and like, you don't have to just be specific in one sound. Like you can do whatever, you know, it's still cool.
Right.
Know?
It was more of like, I like that there was no parameters.
And not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, and I think that was one of the things, like, I think that Tim like saw was that, you know, self-taught filmmaker dude, but with skateboarding history and like music and stuff. So, and I think
he's an art guy too.
He's an art guy. Yeah. My art sucks. Like I used to do art, but
your art,
yeah, it's horrible. It's so bad. I think Joel from Austin Art Garage has a piece that he's like hidden in somewhere. It's just like covered up.
Is it so bad?
It's so bad. Yeah, it's ridiculous. But yeah, it's I don't. Oh my god, yeah, it's a huge beast. That film.
Okay, so he talks to you about this. You realize the amount of work, and then you decide to do it.
Yeah,
and then you've just been traveling the country talking to punk rock people.
Not just punk rock people, like everybody. And it's awesome because, like, you know, like I went the first trip. Like, I started doing interviews during Fun Fest, like two Fun Fests ago.
Okay,
and then you know, I got budgeted to go on the road for like a month and a half, and so I got a small crew, and like, you know, we went in a van and just like a band, you know, we just put our gear in there and started hitting people up, you know, to email them out and like
How were you finding, like, were you going through the history with Tim?
Yeah.
And he'd be like, oh, and this guy had a lot to do with this. And so then you'd reach out to that person.
Yeah, like, Tim would have, like, contacts. And then, like, we get together, like, you know, we get together more than that. But, like, specifically for that, he'll be like, all right, here, this is what I got. You should get this guy and blah, blah, blah. And then, like, I'll have my list of people, you know, and then combine them together. And I'm like, holy shit, that's a lot of people. And then I'll go out and interview these people, and then as soon as it's over or even during an interview, they're like, hey, have you talked to so-and-so?
Oh, right.
And
yeah,
then, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's just like one door opens to another thing, you know. Example, like, I was up in Portland last year, and last February, and Steve Turner from Mudhoney and like Monkey Wrench, he, you know, he's a skater dude, and
you're a skater, dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not. I mean, a career is
active skater.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not gonna be like some of my other friends and like do crazy shit and like get in the hospital and stuff. And,
right.
Like,
do you wear pads now that you're older and you're like, I don't want to like break my arm because
sometimes, like, if it's a big bowl, yeah, I'll wear pads. You know, I just invested in some wrist guards because I've been slamming and like my wrist. Got to have it.
Yeah, you got to.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to get back up. Like, if I fall, like, I'm done for, like, a minute. Go into a coma and come back.
Okay, so the Mudhoney guy, what's his
name? Oh, yeah, Steve Turner. So, okay. Awesome man, awesome dude. And so he is kind of like, well, no, he's like, hey, have you talked to Jeff? And I was like, Jeff who? And he's like, Jeff Ammett. And I'm like,
whoa, from Pearl Jam?
Yeah. And I'm, like, no, I haven't. He's like, dude, you need to, like, and Tim had mentioned him before, but like neither one of us had any contacts, and I didn't know anybody to like try to get a hold of the guy. So he's like, well, hold on a second. So he gets on his phone and he texts Jeff, and then he's like, Jeff wants to know when you can be in Missoula. And I was kind of going that way anyway.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what's his time frame? And he's like, can you be there in 3 days? And I was like, well, shit, yeah, I can do it. So we set it up. And then, like, on the way out there, he's a bass player in Pearl Jam. Yeah. So, midway through, like, in reception, so spotty out there, you know, you don't get anything. Every once in a while, you'll get text, and like, they'll be from like the day before, like, right, hours before. So he texted and was like, hey, can you, you know, give me 2 more days? You know, so it was like 5 days. And I was like, well, shit, yeah, that'd be awesome. So I ended up going to Glacier and like hung out in Glacier and did some shooting up there. And in February,
like, still shooting or
video shooting? And still shooting. And it was amazing. You know, I mean, you can't go like completely into the heart of the park because it's like, it's too much snow and ice, but there's plenty to do. So then, okay, so I make it down after Glacier. I go down to Missoula, Montana, and he literally lives on a mountain, and like a small mountain. It's big. And so he gave me directions. So I get up there, and I'm in a Jeep 4x4, And I go up, and it's so high that you're kind of like in the clouds, and it's real misty, and like you're, I mean, your visibility is probably like 30 feet.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, then so like the road is already kind of gravelly, and then it's dirt, and then it's just slosh eventually.
Yeah.
And then I got lost up there. So like I was like, well, fuck, man, I think I've gone too far. I don't, you know, I'm like way up here. And so like as I back up, the back of the Jeep just kind of bogs in the rear, and I'm like, fuck. And I was like, and I couldn't get out. So I got out and I started grabbing like rocks and tree limbs and shit and tried to MacGyver out of there. And then like, I'm like, dude, this is the first interview with Jeff. And I'm like, this is fucked up. You know, this is not a good first impression.
So like, I'm like, a cafe in town or something.
No, he wanted me to come to his house to skate and stuff and like hang out. And like, so, and like, I didn't. Okay. So
maybe I should skate, man. You get some good interviews.
Yeah, man. Skating's cool. No, go ahead. Yeah. And so, He ends up like he texted me and was like, where are you at? And I was like, I'm on your mountain, and I'm stuck. So he comes out in his car and his truck, and he, you know, he actually drives like a 90s like 4Runner, or not 4Runner, but like a Tacoma. And so he comes out, he's laughing the whole way, and I have it on video on my phone because I was like, this is fucking ridiculous. So he's laughing at me, and then he backs up and he has a tow rope, and like we're both under the Jeep trying to find a non-plasticky part to put the hook on. And I feel horrible because he's getting all muddy, you know, and then we're just laughing about the shit. And so he's like, all right, keep it neutral and just like don't keep on the brakes, you know, like let off the brakes. So he gets in his truck, and when he goes to start his truck, his truck's not starting, so we're both stuck there at this point.
No.
So then, like, we don't have anybody to help either one of us for like an hour until his old lady comes and gets us, and then we go. I go to his mansion, and he has an outdoor skate park, you know, on his property, and then it like overlooks Missoula. It's like it's beautiful, and he's got an indoor warehouse that has a keyhole bowl, and the walls are lined
What's
up
that?
With like it's just a bowl that looks like a keyhole. It's like shaped like a keyhole. There's a small part you drop in on.
And you mean just skate in?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's an indoor bowl. And he's 52, I think, now.
Yeah.
And the dude shreds. He's like insane.
So what is his connection to the big boys?
He grew up in Missoula, and
he's from Montana.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
And he listened to that band. He's a skater, and so like that was one of his bands. He's like big fan.
It's interesting. Like how did he? Because I know there was skate magazines,
mm-hmm.
and I remember my friend. I think you're friends with. Are you friends with Will Sexton?
Yeah, no, yeah, I've seen him eat a hot dog once at Hutt's. Yeah,
I messaged really him. Sexy.
Sorry, Will. No, I messaged him and like was like, I definitely need to get him interviewed and stuff. I was just like,
he was around for that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah, he was younger.
I think Ian Moore was probably around mm-hmm. for that too.
Yeah,
did you talk to him?
Not yet. I have okay.
Sorry, let me go back because I want to figure this out. Because at that time, like how in the skating community did people pass around like mixtapes like they did speed metal and shit? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Okay. And so that's how Jeff got
mixtapes, zines,
right?
Thrasher articles.
But I'm still thinking like Missoula, and I'm thinking mm-hmm. about the time when he was a kid skating. How did you get that shit?
Imagine like if there was a lot of compilation tapes being passed around.
Okay.
You remember you used to make them for your friends and stuff, and it'd be like, check out this band. And hopefully somebody would like write down the names of these songs and bands and stuff so that you have something. But a lot of times Thrasher, Flipside, you know, those old, you know, those I mean, Thrasher's still around.
I remember
around.
Thrasher. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they would put out compilation cassettes too as well. And they would always have reviews and stuff. And like Mofo would do a lot of reviews and put together these compilation tapes like with Skate Master Tate and stuff. And but also it's just like whenever like we were growing up, you would get these LPs or cassettes and pre-CD times, and you would look at the liner notes And so you would read these liner notes and see who this band thanked or was inspired by.
Oh, okay.
So it'd be like, these guys are into 7 Seconds. I'm going to check them out, just for example.
Okay,
you know,
I'm
going to go next time I go to a record store, because there's not internet didn't exist back then.
Right.
You would hopefully write this stuff down, because I know how I am. I'd go into a record store now when I do go, and I lose my train of thought. I'm just like, fuck. And I walk out of there with like Celine Dion or something. But intentionally, I wanted to go in there and buy a Husker Du record or something. Just kidding about that. But yeah, the liner notes were a big thing. Just word of mouth, you know, phone calls and letters, a lot of pen pal stuff, you know.
That's so cool, man.
Mm-hmm.
That develops like a community.
Totally.
Like a real community.
And all these, that wave, that, I wouldn't say first, but like, I mean, kind of, I've met all of them. And, you know, like Fred Armisen's part of that. Ian MacKay, Mike Watt, John Doe, you know, Chris Johansson.
Who's Chris Johansson?
He's a famous artist. But he's also a musician. And he's like, he's cool as hell, man. He was part of that San Francisco scene, you know, but he does amazing, like literally like a piece, like an art piece like that size would probably put your kid through college now. But he's from like he was just a little kid going to shows, you know, like, I mean, it's insane. That band inspired a lot of people, man.
So through their own touring network and web, they made friends and created a scene that was national. But they created it themselves. There was no way. Mm-hmm. There was no radio helping anyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, college radio.
No. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, it was, you know, sometimes you'd have good turnouts and sometimes, like, be 2 people. Sometimes nobody back then when those guys played, you know.
And a lot of those shows weren't at clubs. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, here it was because this was a music town, so it had, like, a punk place. And you could do something at Liberty Lunch or a place like that. But
cafes.
In Missoula, I'm sure you had to get like the Veterans Hall or something.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
What I mean?
You would rent that out, and hopefully they would be cool with that. You know, that was like all around America. You know, people would let you, like a Veterans Hall, community center.
Did this guy Bob in Lake Jackson? What was his place, or did he just do them at different places?
He did. Jasmine Hall was the big place, and then there was the Clute Community Center, and so like, you know, bands like Carbomb and Trigger and Blueprint.
Wasn't Dead Horse from that area?
They're from Houston. Okay. But they were metal.
Okay. They weren't.
Nah. Okay. I dealt with those guys a couple of years ago. They're kind of buttholes.
Really?
I mean, yeah, they were weird. Like,
I remember at a time I saw them, it must have been like 90 or 91. They were fucking great.
Yeah,
like
they had a different, that singer was awesome.
Yeah.
There's a different singer now. He looks like Larry the Cable Guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but there was a place where the punk and kind of underground metal met, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was like back then, there wasn't like, it wasn't like hardcore, you know, skate rock or whatever. Everything was just together. People were just doing things, and like it was just one big community of artists, you know, musicians and creative people.
How did Jeff know them? He was just influenced by them?
Yeah, but he had been like, you know, yeah, he was skating, but he was influenced by a bunch of other bands, you know, Black Flag, Minor Threat, you know, and when you skate it, like, you would somehow get a hold of a magazine that would have a review, or somebody would mention, like, what they're listening to. And,
right.
And then they would find out, you know, SST Records used to, like, do those catalogs.
Right.
And, like, you would get all those cool records and tapes and stuff. And so that was that. And then, of course, like, you know, he meets people and moves to Seattle and starts playing music. And then, he'd been in a bunch of bands, like Green River. He was in that band, and he was coming down to in Green River. They had like they bought a school bus as a tour van before Pearl Jam, and it blew up or caught on fire. So they weren't able to come down to, because they were going to play with Poison 13, if I'm not mistaken, which was like the band right after the Big Boys. And
in Austin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Poison 13 was
Chris Gates, okay. And Tim and Mike and, you know, a few other people.
What? Okay, so just real quick, the Big Boys started in 79 and ended when?
84.
So you think I might have seen one of their last shows?
Yeah, you probably did.
Was mm-hmm. it in the fall of 84? Because that's when I moved here in the summer. I think I went there around, like, after Purple Rain came out.
It was around, yeah, it was around then. Like, it kind of, like, lingered a little bit. But, like, they, yeah, you probably did see them, I'm sure. You know, they would play at the Ritz and Raoul's. I don't know if you were back in the Raoul's days, but, like...
I didn't know Raoul's at all. I just mm-hmm. know it from historically. I didn't know it firsthand.
Clubfoot, yeah.
Yeah.
All those places, man. Yeah, they played a lot of places. There's an archive. Like, there's an actual website that a friend of mine did way back. It's Sound on Sound. It's a Big Boys website, but it has, like, it's an archival. The dude's an archivist. Like, he... has everything, all the show posters, all the show dates, and which is pretty awesome. It's rad because it's a good, like, reference for me to go to.
Yeah.
So I can look at it and stuff and, like, you know.
Do you feel like you've just been schooled on that? Like, big time. I'm sure you knew the scene before, yeah, but now you know the dudes. You know who they influenced. You know who they were influenced by.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got the fucking...
It's like, I mean, my internal hard drive... you know, it's like, it's full. I have to, like, change it out now. There's just so much. I've soaked in so much information that it's crazy. Like, like a year ago, you know, oh, I got this. Like, this is, you know, I can do this. So, you know, I can interview people and shoot, you know, my ass off. But, and now I'm just like, fuck, I'm full, but I'm ready. I want to keep going. You know, there's no stopping.
How far are you along? Are you done interviewing people?
No, I've still got some Texas. I have a few people.
What is this
going
to be, like, 35 hours long? Is it going to be like that Tom Petty
no.
Documentary that Peter Bogdanovich made? It's like 4 hours long.
Oh, hell no. That's the one I saw with Alejandro, too. Jesus Christ, I remember that. Yeah, no, it's going to be cut. It's cut. Yeah, it's got to be cut down. It's like 90 minutes, maybe a little bit more.
Okay.
But there'll be like the bonus feature, you know, bonus DVD. There'll be the hard copy. And of course, like right now it's big, like internet web stuff, you know, iTunes and like all the other different formats that you can release stuff on, you know, because like at the beginning, once you put like, it comes out, I mean, it'll always be available Blu-ray, regular DVD or whatnot.
Well, wait, it's not, but when do you
2017.
Propose? Okay.
Yeah. Ooh. And I finally, I mean, we're in like the it's being cut here in Austin and over at Charlie Uniform Tango, which is a post-production house.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm, and they did a Descendants filmage and the Fat Wreck doc.
It's been around for a long time, like 15 years at least, right?
Yeah. It's out of Dallas.
I knew a girl there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Who is it? Okay, cool. We won't go there. Yeah, no, Justin Wilson is working with me on this project. He was one of the directors on filmage, and he's shot some stuff on this last trip last summer, and he's doing a lot of editing and, you know, like cutting up stuff. We work together on some stuff, man. He's awesome. He's like everybody I've worked with on this thing and out, you know, like has anything that's like amazing.
When you were going out and shooting this stuff, like when you went mm-hmm. and shot the stuff with Jeff, how do you say his name? Amit?
Jeff Amit. I always say Amit. Yeah. Amit. It might be Amit. Amit. Or
Amit.
Amit.
Okay. So when you go out and shoot him, it's just you.
Yeah. It's just me. I just
set up a tripod and a.
Well, yeah. The first time I took Lou and Brian Taylor, and like Lou is an amazing sound dude. He's young and like he's awesome. So I took those two guys. And then Brian is a badass cinematographer, director, you know, photographer. He's awesome. And I
learned their jobs and then left it behind the next.
Oh, no, that's what they probably think. Sorry, guys. We went and like it was pretty. But the first trip was crazy because it was like I actually scheduled the interviews. And so it was like fucking insane. Whereas like you have like 3 to 5 interviews in one day in LA and outside of LA. And it's just like, what the fuck was I thinking? So we were constantly in this van, like boom, 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 hitting all this shit, stressing the fuck out.
And you got like John Doe.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I got him actually here in Austin, when X played. I got he and NX Scene. And John's cool. John actually, like, I was going to do a project with him on his ranch, and then I had to keep going north. But I think that we're going to hopefully work on something up there. He lives outside of San Francisco. And
like work on something, your own project?
One of his things, because okay. He does like solo stuff, so, and he has horses, which I think is rad. So okay. I want to go ride horses with him. He's fucking cool. He's awesome. What was I going to... Oh, yeah. So I went, and then like, man, I thought, oh, shit. I lost some hair like on that trip, because, I mean, there was like one time, like Mike, we had to go to interview Mike Watt, and I was thinking, like, I would like get these, you know, hotels and like places for the guys. Like, this would be cool to hang out here in Big Sur, like, you know. So we were on in Venice Beach, and so like I got the Cadillac hotel, I got a room for really cheap, and I thought it'd be cool. It was a total shithole, and so we were in the habit of bringing all our gear up because we didn't want to get shit stolen, and so we had a Mike Watt interview that one day, and we're supposed to be there at 10 a.m. And like, so we put everything on a cart, and I pushed the cart inside of this tiny ass elevator, and I couldn't fit my ass in there. So like, I reached in and pushed lobby, and then like stepped out of it, and it closed. And I'm like, cool, I'm gonna be downstairs. And like, it never opened. The fucking elevator got stuck, and the hotel, they were so angry, and like they had to get their maintenance dudes.
Oh, no,
and like
we were
fucking late, and you know, he lives in San Pedro, which is like fucking south, and it's Mike Watt, and so he's texting me like, where are you? And I'm like, I'm on my way. And then he's like, hey, we're still doing this, where are you? And I'm like, I'm on the road, but I wasn't. And then our shit's stuck in the elevator, and I'm like, fuck, man. And he's giving me shit via text, and I thought he was being serious. When we get there, he was like totally fucking with me, and was so cool. And yeah, I interviewed him at his practice space, and that dude has stories for days. They all do. I mean, but
I've heard some of that guy's stories.
My God.
I heard one that was so brutal that like... it was somebody else's story about him,
uh-huh.
But he was ill,
uh-huh.
And couldn't obviously stop his own bowel movements.
Oh, and kept playing, yeah.
And he tied off the bottom. Yeah, yeah, of his
yeah. Jeans. That's a legend. Yeah, shit his pants. Yep, he hit that brown note, man. That was all she wrote.
Jesus Christ.
Fuck it, dude. That's How hardcore. He's
he
good.
Right?
Yeah, he's totally he's busy. I mean, you know, Mike Watt, he's always busy.
It's weird. I had an old bandmate that produced a Kelly Clarkson record, and he played bass on it, which is just very surreal.
Yeah. He just ends up and just like, yeah, just ends up in places. Like
who else did you get?
Oh,
those
man.
Are some fucking legends, man. Mm-hmm. So what was his connection to them? The Minutemen?
Yeah, the Minutemen.
Did shows mm-hmm. with them?
They were kind of considered, yeah, they were kind of considered like the sister band, or like,
oh, really?
It would be vice versa. And and they both had like big dude front guys, you right. know.
What about Gibby? Did you interview him?
No. In fact, I have his number, and I've left messages because I've been in New York numerous times, and
that's where he's living.
He's
now?
Living up there,
oh, really?
And and his answering machine is like, and I know it's an answering machine. It's got to be. It's like you, oh man, fuck, Charles. I think it's like you've contacted Charleston Heston or like some old actor. So like at the beginning, I would leave like, hey, Miss Gibby, this is Joe. I'm directing the Big Boys. Would love to get you and, you know, blah, blah, blah on the film and stuff. And then I finally became this joke. It was like, hey, you know, like you left your dildos over at my house, you know, call me back. You know, it's just like, he's never going to call back, but it's okay. Cause I have like, probably close to like 70 something people,
but they were
so
like
far.
A real they I mean weren't they I mean they were here with mm-hmm. them
yeah
they, and their time crossed over
yeah
in my recollection they might have done a show
yeah no they did quite a few shows and
before Do they know it's Christmas? But after Purple Rain, some point in there.
Purple Rain was the shit, man. Like,
I just read a whole book
like
about
Sheila E. was in that, right?
No, Apollonia.
Okay.
No.
What, Sheila E. wasn't in it?
Apollonia? Yeah.
She didn't? Okay. Do the Oak Tree. Remember the other band? The Oak Tree. They used to play that at the skating rink. Yeah, you Purple Rain was the shit.
You mean The Time?
The Time, yeah. Maybe, I don't know if it was called Do the Oak Tree, but there was some song that was kind of cool.
Yeah, they had Jungle Love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jungle Love was awesome.
The Bird.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's go back to who else did you get?
Okay, and what part of the country?
Okay, go back to L.A. Who else was out there?
Okay, let's see, L.A.
Did you get like Lee Ving or any of was he from before?
No, he was like,
or he's from that
from that time. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've actually whatchamacallit. I should have all this stuff written down. Now this is where brain farts start happening. Yeah, I've got. Let's see, in L.A. Blah blah blah. He finally. Did you always have that?
No.
You don't ever use that.
Gave it to me because she heard me say so many times. I needed some sound effects for my show.
Mm. Yeah, I didn't get, haven't got Danzig, but I did get...
Danzig, he's a metal guy, right? Or was he
Yeah, he was punk, point? Misfits. Yeah, they were playing shows, and like Misfits? Yeah, he was a singer, and so like...
Glenn Danzig?
Yes.
There's stuff I just don't know.
Wow, that's crazy. Really?
Yeah, that world I just don't know.
That's insane. Yeah, they would stay with Tim and Beth. Like, they would come... All those bands stayed with them, like Minor Threat, even the Bad Brains. You know, like...
did you talk to those guys?
Yes, I did.
That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I saw those guys at Fitzgerald's in Houston.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Back when HR was still crazy.
That was a pretty moving...
Yeah.
That was a pretty over-the-top fucking show.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a... I don't know. I'm supposed to keep it a secret.
What? Got some good news?
Got some good stuff.
Okay.
On that guy.
Well,
yeah.
Check it out. I think those guys are amazing.
Mm-hmm. They're rad.
DC,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they were like...
Okay, so it was a network. It was a national network. I need to get Tim on here, man.
Yeah, you definitely need to get him on here
and
for
Chris,
sure.
And Chris, too, huh?
Yeah, Chris would love to do that.
Isn't Chris just down the street?
Yeah, Chris lives in Buda. Like,
oh,
but
he's
like
down the street on
AA, like, guru. Like, so, like, I see him, like, I go to meetings and stuff, so, like, I see him... And hang out.
Aren't you not supposed to say that?
What's
that? Isn't that part of the A's?
Oh, I don't give a shit.
One of the A's?
Yeah, I'm like, punk, I don't give a fuck. Okay. I'll oust anybody. I don't care.
Ow.
Yeah.
How's that
going?
Let me
tell you who else is in there?
No.
I'm totally kidding. And
how many of these punk guys are in it?
Fuck, dude.
That's
their reunions, man. Fucking A. Like, even Bob Forrest, like, holy shit, that was a guy
There's
that I
There's a lot
hung.
Of sober guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was one thing. Okay, my fucking notes. Okay.
I like that you have notes.
Yeah. Okay, so this past summer, I went through this, like, crazy breakup, right? And then, like, I got dumped. And so...
Oh.
I was with this. I mean, we're cool now. We're best friends, you know. And like, dude, it sucks under these circumstances. But and I told her I probably wouldn't go like off into that stuff. But at the time,
you mean on this show?
Yeah, but let's see. We'll see. And so anyhow, So she hooked up with another dude, and like. She was like, you need to come back to Texas and get your stuff and figure out. And I was like, I can't just, I have all these interviews. And like, at this point I was shooting for other companies. So like, aside from the interviews for the big boys, I had to go out into these national parks and like do some outdoor stuff. And so like for
money, you had to make a living.
Yeah.
Cause this
and
documentary
I can't,
shit is not,
I mean, there's a budget for it, but it's it's for that,
yeah,
you know, it's,
not, it's
like,
it's not living the dream.
Yeah. No. But I mean, I'm very thankful that it does have a
that's
budget.
That's what I love that. Yeah. I think that's why they're so, most of them are so good is because you got to really fucking want to do it.
Uh-huh. It's either do or die.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck
you're
it,
not,
dude.
You're not going to get rich off of it. You're doing it.
No.
You love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So sorry. Go ahead.
So, yeah. So, I don't even know where to fucking go with it. Oh, yeah.
Dumped.
Oh, yeah. So,
you got to come back.
Yeah. And I'm like, there's no fucking way. And like, So I was staying with my friend, Matt Cook. He's an actor. You know Matt Nappy? Used to live here in Austin. He's an actor. Like now he's like Walking Dead. And like he's just finished a movie with Nick Cage and Willem Dafoe in Cleveland. Wow. And I stay with him in L.A. and Melrose. And he and I hang out. And he's like the dude that kind of pushed me into all of this shit, you know. And like the acting.
And then that right.
Yeah. So, man, I started obsessing because like at first I thought like, well, I'm cool with this breakup. And then I started thinking like, dude, there's another dude sitting on my couch watching my TV, eating out of my bowls, you know, and like sleeping in my bed. And I couldn't stop it, you know. And like I don't drink and I don't smoke pot or anything. So it just started fucking me up. And like I was losing sleep. And I mean, there was one time where like Matt came out of the bedroom and I was sleeping on a sleeper. He has a pull out couch and it was just the couch. It wasn't pulled out, but like it was 4 a.m. and I was sitting up and the light was on. And I had a blanket over my head, and I was just, like, rocking back and forth like a freak. And, like, I think I was borderline having a panic attack. And I remember hearing the door open, and Matt starts chuckling. Because he thought I was fucking with him, because he gets up really early to go do all this, like, fucking workout stuff. And he's like, what's up, bro? And I was like, what are you? I told him that I was, you know, like, what was going on. And, like, we went and had coffee, and he kind of put things in perspective. Like, he's like, dude, fuck that. Like, look what you're about to do. You know, you're going skateboarding with Tony Alva, you know, you have a rad like vehicle that you're traveling in, you know, like you're sponsored by camera companies and like, you're doing all this crazy shit and then I was like, man, you're fucking right. And then, that just kind of like, that helped a lot. And then I did go skateboarding with Tony Alva, and then we hung out and like played bass guitar, and like it was just fucking surreal. It was crazy. And he's another sober dude. I mean, it's funny is like I hung out with Bob Forrest, who's like Celebrity Rehab with Dr. Drew, and
I know who you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I've heard him on podcasts before.
Yeah, he's on Marin's recently, and he's like Thelonious Monster, and like he and I became really good friends. Mm-hmm. And he's awesome. And like, you know, he'd call me and he's like, what are you doing today? Let's go get some coffee, you know, go hang out. And like to be around like TA and like Bob at that time when I was like, fuck, I don't have a crutch, you know, I don't think I'm going to relapse or anything, drink or whatever.
Really? You didn't?
I mean, I think about it every day.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's like my life now, like compared to when I was like doing that shit. There's no comparison. Yeah. It's like so much better, man. And that would be crazy. That would be like the fucking Nukem bomb if I did some crazy shit like that. So having those guys around and like Matt Cook, you know, it really helped me get through that process. And going to these meetings, like, you know, in Los Angeles that were like crazy, insane, awesome, you know, to hear these people's stories and stuff and like be able to connect. And I didn't know that like Tony Alva was going to be like the key speaker and one. And I'm like sitting on the floor with Bob, and he's like, he was with this new girl. I guess he's with her now, like for good. But he's like, Mr. Adventurer, you know, like look at you and filmmaker, blah, blah, blah. And I hear this voice and I'm like, dude, that voice sounds familiar. And like I stood up and it was Tony Alva, like going through his whole life of like how he used to fuck up as a kid to now where he's like killing it with everything. You know, to all the stuff he had to go through, I guess, like all of us too. So then I got it together and then, continued to keep going and, just kept going. So like that was the thing. I was supposed to come back in July. And since I didn't really have a home anymore, I just said, fuck it. And just kept going and like talked to my producer and, you know, and he's like, if you want to keep going out, you know, like, so I kept lining up interviews and lining up work and I just kept going. And like, it was kind of like, Forrest Gump when he just started jogging forever. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just kept going, yeah. And like there was no stopping. And I like that 2 month adventure turned into 6 months of just nonstop, and I got so much done, you know. And even at the end, I didn't even want to come back. I wanted to keep going, but I knew I had to come back and deal with stuff. But yeah, it was a life experience, man. It was a fucking quest. Still is. Mm. Yeah. So much has changed in the last 2 years since I've been here, or whenever that was, like 2012, right? Or 2013?
No.
2013?
I thought it was like 2014.
Was it?
It was just like, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sometime, maybe it wasn't that like long. In the summer or something.
Oh, maybe it was like 5 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just a couple weeks ago. I just made up this whole story.
And good night. So, yeah.
So what's your angle? Like the overall, the big boys.
Oh, man, there's so
doc.
Much.
It's what is like the...
It's, you know, about the band for sure, of course, you know, but it's like all these mini, it's everybody's upbringings, you know. You have like your, you know, your Jeff Nelsons of Minor Threat, you have like, you know, Corey Rusk, you have your, you have everybody in the movies, like where they started. So you have these mini docs within this one main doc about the band. And it's kind of like how my friend Ben put it, because he's been following everything, and it's, you know, it's difficult for me to describe it because there's so many different narratives and storylines to like talk about, because I haven't really solidified like the main thing. But there's like homophobia and like, you know, just being different back then when it wasn't as accepted as it is now, you know, and it still isn't now, you know, but especially back then, you know, in these small towns where these people were doing something different out of the norm, you know. And imagine Missoula,
yeah,
you know, like that's fucked up. And then
being a weirdo there,
here in Austin, you know, back in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, you were constantly in battle with like rednecks and frat dudes and shit. And they were always wanting an excuse to whip somebody's ass, you know, for being different. And I mean, just the fact of like Randy, you know, the singer in the Big Boys, being gay, you know, but not being like open. He wasn't like open about it or anything. He was more like asexual guy from what I'm gathering. But to be in a punk band back then and in a Texas town and you happen to be gay, like that's a huge fucking deal.
But it seems like in the general punk scene,
but nobody cared back then.
Right.
You were just doing it. And like, nobody knew they were doing something that was going to influence generations later.
No,
you know, just... like those guys, I mean, there was the Freddie Mercury's and all that stuff, but like in these small communities and these underground like scenes, you know, people like Randy and like Bob Mould, and like they were fucking setting the groundwork, and like they were the front runners, like the first wave of people pushing that, you know. They didn't know that they were doing that, but they were like,
pushing,
well, making it for
being cool to be a gay dude in a, like, in a punk rock
don't
scene.
Be afraid to do that stuff, man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah,
fuck what everybody else thinks, you know. Like, do what you got to do, you know. And like that was a huge influence, you know. And that's just one part of it. I mean, there's also like, you look at the art that all those guys did, you know.
Unbelievable.
And and it like it influenced a lot of these, like the Chris Johansons, man. Like all these people that do art and are famous and known for it, like they were influenced by these record. I mean, remember when you go to a record store and you'd flip through the records and you would see a record like, huh, I've never heard of this band, but this artwork
is so cool,
or photography like is fucking rad.
Yeah.
I'm gonna gamble on it. This might be my whole lunch money for the week, but I'm gonna just go ahead and take it and just pray that it didn't suck. And if it did, then you made it grow on you eventually, you know. So like that stuff that would speak out to people, and the fact that they did it themselves, you know, and use whatever they had available to make stuff, you know, was huge and still is, you know. I mean, that's like my thing as well, you know. It has been. So
it must have been very cool to get to go around and sit down face to face with all these guys that had such an impact on you.
Yeah.
Now you got their numbers. Most of them are skaters, and you can skate with them.
Oh yeah, yeah. Everything's cool now. I mean, like I'll get text and like emails or sometimes phone calls and like just asking how I'm doing and stuff. But yeah, it is pretty rad, you know. Like Ian MacKay of Fugazi Minor Threat, you know, hanging with him and doing stuff and like just listening to his stories and like him calling Tim and like listening to those guys talk to each
Where
other.
Where are all those guys at doing stuff?
Ian is in
now?
DC and like he's Discord Records.
Okay.
And he's he is in a band with his wife called the Evens. It's a duo. He plays baritone, sings. She plays drums, sings. But Discord Records was like the Fugazi, Shutter right. Think, Jawbox, and the, you know. Oh, and then another story, like I was in San Francisco and I was at 1, 2, 3, 4 Records. And I was there with Jen and her friend and we were having coffee outside and there was a record store / video store and they had like those cool like cinema t-shirts that were like Jodorowsky in like or like Fassbinder in Metallica font, you know, but they had like a Bauhaus one mm-hmm. in a different dude. And I was like, oh cool, they carry those shirts. So I didn't want to go shop for purses with these chicks, so like I was like, I'm gonna do my own thing. So I go in there and I'm looking at records and shirts, and this dude, I was going through their clearance rack, and this dude from behind the counter is like, oh, cool tattoo. And he was talking about this Big Boys one. And I was like, thanks. And he's like, yeah, man, shit, you're diehard if you got their tattoo. And I was like, yeah, I'm diehard enough to be making their movie. And then he's like, oh, you're the guy making the movie? Holy shit. And so, like, he had all these questions and stuff and was, like, telling me stories. I had no clue who this fucking guy was. I just thought he was an owner. They just like an employee, you know? And then, so he's like, man, what, you should screen the movie here. You should like have a special, I don't know what you're going to do, theatrical release
right,
or whatever.
Right, right.
So we go in the basement and he has like a private screening room, and, I'm just listening to him. And then he's like, yeah, when Blake and I used to go to the shows, I'm like, Blake. Okay. And then he's like, yeah, you know, when Jawbreaker was like playing, and I was like, what? And then I realized like that's Adam from Jawbreaker, like the drummer,
wow.
Who's like, that's a huge, 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 huge band, you know? And that was fucking nuts. So the next thing you know, we're hanging out and we do an interview, and then we go, you know, we're hanging in his house and like, you know, listening to records and like shooting dumb stuff and like talking about all kinds of shit. And, yeah, it was insane. It's just like things like that, man. They're like magical moments.
That's great.
Pretty awesome.
Are you working on any other stuff outside of that? Are you
doing
videos
yeah.
for anyone?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah. I just got like finalized.
Do you have a website?
Mm-hmm. JoeSalinasFilms.com. It needs to be updated because it's just kind of like a profile one. But I mean, if anybody wants to follow me, just go to Instagram. It's JoeSalinasFilms and, you know, the Instagram. But yeah, I'm doing a thing for Jester King Brewery. I just like finalized that. Shooting a music video for this band called My Golden Calf. We're in production. I shoot content for Goal Zero. That's one of my sponsors. And Black Magic Design, which is my camera company sponsor. And when I'm out skating with friends, I'll shoot them and just make little videos. Who else? Oh, yeah, Modi Supply Company, which is an outdoors adventurer. I'm part of that adventure outdoors, you know, like I'm like the ordinary guy doing extraordinary things. You know, like I climbed 5 mountains this past year, which is like fucking insane. I never thought I'd, when we were talking last, that thought was not a thought.
No.
Hell no, dude. And like next thing you know, like I'm climbing like these 14ers and it's just like, I'm not supposed to be here right now. This is fucking insane. And like, yeah, it's now I'm addicted, man. I mean, I've always been out into the outdoors, but like any chance I get, like I was in Big Bend and like a few weeks ago and it snowed and like it got really cold and like I got stuck out there. It was 9 degrees and like I couldn't get down on the switchbacks cause they were iced over. So it was just me in a tent and like, whew, bless you.
No bass player from Pearl Jam to come.
No, dude, I was fucked. I had like, I mean, I had like minimal shit. I had a sleeping bag and stuff, but like I wasn't equipped for, it's so unpredictable in the basin.
Yeah.
I mean, like the Chisos Mountains are like fucking gnarly and it's cool that Texas has that.
Yeah.
Like I had no, I knew of Big Ben, and I've, you know, kind of studied it, but I've never been there, you know, proper.
That's great.
And, like, I went out there, and I was like, and what turned into, like, one, what I was going to just do 1 or 2 days, I stayed for the week and just, like, did all kinds of cool shit. But I've been to, like, every national park, and, like, I've done all kinds of stuff.
Awesome, man. Well, I look forward to seeing this big boy. Do you have a name for it?
You can color outside of the lines. You can color outside the lines. The okay. Big boys, yeah. Okay. It's a, there's an IMDb. It's
oh,
got,
there is already?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, I need to update, like, a lot of stuff.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe.
Yeah, thanks for having
thanks for
me.
Thanks for coming by. Mm-hmm. Everyone follow him on Instagram. Go to joesalinasfilms.com. And we look forward to You Can Color Outside the Lines.
Yeah.
The big boy story.
Thanks, Johnny.
All right, buddy.
All right, bye.
Yeah. Joe Salinas. I love talking to that dude, man. He's very creative, very, very, he's very aggressively creative, which is great, man. He's out there. He's got a fire under his ass. JoeSalinasFilms.com. Find out all about him. His documentary, You Can Color Outside the Lines, the story of the big boys, will be out at some point later on. You can find out, though, by going to JoeSalinasFilms.com and finding out. I'd like to thank him for coming by. Always great to talk to him. Hey, don't forget, when you're out there checking out JoeSalinasFilms.com, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher. We're trying to get on Spotify. You can find me. You can like our Facebook page. And then you can share. If you have a podcast you like Joe Salinas, share it on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, wherever you can, all right? Thank you so much for listening to the show. Thank you to Joe for coming by. I'm looking forward to that. You Can Color Outside the Lines. Go check him out. JoeSalinasFilms.com. Have a great day. Let's get down, people.